For today's topic at hand, we're thinking about technology, social media, and if we were to take a survey, what is your first reaction? What's your first reaction if somebody just pulls you on the side and they say, "What's as a spiritual person, what's your reaction? What's your thought on technology, on social media?" And then fill in the, you know, Facebook, WhatsApp, TikTok, v'chule. So for many of us, the first reaction would be astonishment. Now, I had to put it in the Mar Makomos because if it wasn't written, you wouldn't believe it. But it's stated, it's beferish, in the Wall Street Journal just a few weeks ago, that apparently there's a competition between this company called Meta, I'm not going to be marach on this inyan, and something called TikTok. Apparently, on the top of your first page, according to Laura Forman in her article, each day, TikTok users total over 200 million hours. It's wild. 200 million hours a day. People are watching TikTok. Pella. So many of you would say, the first thing you think about, right, it's wild. The other thing that many of you would say was, well, there's a danger. There's a concern. There is an article that articulates some of these concerns in a fascinating way by Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter. It's published in this work called The Jewish Law Association Studies. It's volume 29, The Impact of Technology, Science, and Knowledge. So Rabbi Schachter has in this article, as you see on the right side, somebody sent him once a tefilas haderech when using the internet. Yiratzum lefanecha, should be your will, don't worry, it's translated, because it's modern Hebrew, shetechavreinu b'shalom, v'segalshenu, because in modern Hebrew, to search the internet is liglosh, v'sagienu la'asar chavtzenu b'shalom, we should reach our destined website in peace. We should connect with peace and a cheap plan. We should be saved mikol virus and nefila, mikol mite mine asare zevel, all kinds of phishing websites. Pritzas vavodazara misrakshim lova ba'olam ha-virtual. Vesishlach bracha b'chomasi achbarenu, and achbar is a mouse, so our mice should have siyata d'shmaya. In the eyes of every screen, we should find grace from the Ribbono Shalom. V'sishma kol arna kanenu, and you should hear the voice of our wallets. Ki shomea tefila v'sachnu ata umaginenu mibitul's man. Save us from, this is the best one, wasting time. Not that anybody ever does that. Because there's a concern. And there's obviously, when you think about technology, there's a danger. And so Rabbi Schachter articulates and categorizes in this article some of the concerns that we have. What's interesting about this article is some of these concerns, the fact that it's easy to disseminate false information, inaccurate information, the fact that it's easy to slander people, embarrass for people to waste their time. He actually spends the entire article demonstrating that these claims, these issues, were all, and many others, were all raised at the advent of the printing press. People started publishing books, so the Maharsha said, you know, we're going to have bad editions of Shas, because people are going to start fixing things in the margin that they think need to be fixed, but they don't need to be fixed, and now we're going to have all kinds of published tshuvas that are idiotic. But anybody with a printing press is just going to shake it out of their sleeve. We're going to have all kinds of silliness and slander and pamphlets and who knows what. So you're talking about the same phenomenon over and over, but it's the same yesod, which is technology, advancement, innovation. So there are dangers. So this is, I would say, fairly obvious to us, that when it comes to the technologies of the day, we face many perils, especially when it comes to the realm of Kedusha, of holiness. The last time I spoke in this room, in this audience, I got into some trouble by giving too much detail about the Erev Yom Kippur men's mikveh experience. That I got into a lot of trouble from that. So for today, we're just going to suffice it to say that, especially for men and adolescent men, but it's true for all men, there is a terrible danger and a hazard that didn't exist even when I was growing up, which is not so long ago. Because in those times in antiquity, in the 80s and 90s, for someone to get a hold of something that was really damaging to their neshama, they had to get a fake ID and go to 7-Eleven. It was like a whole, people were involved in all kinds of things, but it wasn't in their pocket, lo aleinu. It wasn't in the same space that they were also trying to write a Dvar Torah or find some research on something, you know. But where the danger is real, it is clear, it is present, and it is serious. So if someone were to ask you about technology from a spiritual standpoint, of course, obviously, we would articulate the challenges and the dangers. So let's take a step back from that. And if I were to guess, to ask you, okay, let's put the dangers aside for a second. How would you view technology? How do you view technological advances? So I would guess that many of you would give the same response. And you would give this shiur, this point of the shiur, you would just shake it out of your sleeve, and it's obvious to you. You would tell me that technology is a tool. It's a tool, right? You could get up and give this shiur, I'm just wasting my time. You would point out, you would say, let's look at the first source on your first page, where the pasuk tells us that there was a man in antiquity, his name was Tuval Kayin. Parshas Breishis Vitzila Gami Yolda as Tuval Kayin. Lo Tesh Kol Chorish Nechoshes Ubarzel Vachos Tuval Kayin Nama. We're not going to focus on that part of the pasuk. So what's the story with this guy Tuval Kayin? He was an innovator. Lo Tesh Kol Chorish Nechoshes Ubarzel. He forged instruments, tools out of iron. Technological advancements. I assume this was used for farming. You think? Rashi says, not so fast. Says Rashi in the underline, V'hiskin umnaso shel Kayin. Why is the guy's name Tuval Kayin? Because he's like Kayin. Lasos klei zayin l'rotzchim. To make implements for murder. This technological advance made it much easier to kill people. Because now you have metal devices. That's what Rashi says. So what would you say about the advancement of making metal utensils? So turn the page on source number 3. So you're going to say, look at Rav Dessler, the Heliger Rav Elio Dessler, the great Mashkiach. He says, of course, technology is a tool. And initially, when people were using technology, when they were using metal, they were unrefined. So instead of using it for farming, they used it to kill their neighbors and axe them to death brutally. Ki terem in the underline, he says in the Michtav Melio, ki terem yisukan kol olam b'midoseim, before people were refined in their character, yishtam shubuchol ef sheruseim l'ra, they used the things that they had, the implements, for evil. Because technology is a tool. So you could use metal for farming, and you could use it for killing. And the same thing is true, you would probably guess, if you were to give a shiur about Migdal Bavel. For many of you, I would say, this is obvious. What happens in Parshas Noach, right before the introduction of Avraham Avinu, we hear a story, a very interesting story, about a tower. A mysterious tower that we don't know exactly what's wrong with this tower, but there's something problematic about this tower that the Rebbe Shlomo says it's a terrible idea. What did they do? Vayomru, says the pasuk in source number 4, Ishel re'eu, hava nil b'no levenim, let us make bricks, v'nisrafo l'srefa, and we're going to set up a kiln, an oven. Vati lahem ha'levena l'oven, the bricks became, they were strong in the oven, v'achemar, and the mortar, ha'yo lahem l'chomer. This is source number 4. So what did they do? These guys in antiquity, they came up with a new idea of how to make better bricks. A better mousetrap. A new technology of building. They hadn't had this before. Says Rav David Zvi Hoffman, the great Gaon, B'makom lishtamish, instead of using natural stone, which is what they used originally, However, now they came up with a new idea. B'makom, third line, B'makom achomer min adama dveka shetzviya adamdam. Shetziva adamdam. They came up with red bricks. A new look. A new advanced technology. Hishtamshu b'chemar. They used some kind of pitch. And now, with this new technology, they're going to build a huge skyscraper. Nobody ever had built skyscrapers before this. But now we're going to build one. We came up with a new technology. And what does the Rebbe Shlom say about this? Bad idea. Now, here's one small secret. It's a good thing you came this morning, because I'm going to share a trade secret. If you ever want to give a Parsha Shir, and maybe you don't have so much time to prepare, here is a secret. Yehuda Nachshoni, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. He wrote a book called Hagos B'Parshios HaTorah, Thoughts on the Parsha. So now, you might have time to prepare a Parsha Shir and look through every commentary on the Parsha. But maybe you have other things to do, and you have other shirim to prepare, so you need a cheat book. Comes Nachshoni, and he gives you the cheat book. So I'm about to give away half the Parsha Shirim that you ever listened to. Many of them I've given. So what Nachshoni does is he goes through every Parsha and he raises the key issues and he summarizes lots of Mefarshim who talk about these issues so you know where to look. Otherwise you spend hours and hours searching. So he says, Migdal Bavel, I got to tell you, everyone's talking about Migdal Bavel. So I Xerox for you on the next page in source number 6, where the Nachshoni, he summarizes many approaches to the problem, the issue of Migdal Bavel, what was so problematic. This was a technological revolution. Rabbeinu Bechaye, so I looked this up because I couldn't believe it, and he writes it. Rabbeinu Bechaye says, you know what the Migdal Bavel was? It was originally meant to be a lightning rod. They figured there was a mabul, and maybe the Rebbe Shlom was going to try to destroy the world with fire. That was their backup thought. So if they could channel fire that came down from heaven, a lightning rod, so they could channel the fire into the ground like we have today, there's such a thing. I'm assuming downtown on the top of the Sears Tower, they must have lightning rods. I'm sure they do, right? That was the innovation, says Rabbeinu Bechaye, of the Migdal Bavel. The problem was, instead of using it as a lightning rod, they figured they're going to use it as a missile against God. So they got a little bit misguided. But the whole idea is that technology is a tool. So it could have been used to channel lightning in a healthy way, and in turn, it ended up being used and misused in the wrong way. Similarly, later on, he quotes the Abarbanel. You know, Abarbanel did not have an easy life, because although he, at the time, he was in the heyday of his role in the Spanish government, he was expelled with all the Spanish Jews during the expulsion. The Abarbanel in several places, Don Yitzchak Abarbanel, he talks about the dangers of civilization and the dangers of society and the development of society. So he sees this as a development of civilization which is negative. This is obviously colored by his experience that you had this very advanced and sophisticated Spanish society which then decided to take all their Jews and force them either to convert or leave. But the idea is that the story of Migdal Bavel is exactly the shear that you would give if you were to talk about technology. You would say, technology is a tool, it could be used for something good, but instead, people oftentimes use it for something bad. That's what you would like to say about technology. And that's what maybe I would have said a few years ago, before I encountered a man who changed my life, changed the lives of many, many people, and he changed the world. With his thinking, he revolutionized the world, and he shares an insight that he comes back to in different frames that will literally blow your mind. I came across this not too long ago, one frame of this in a chavrusa that I have with a friend of mine, a colleague, learning this sefer. It's called Ein Ayah. The author of the sefer turned the page for a quick biographical sketch. Brought new light into the world. His name is Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. If you have the schus to be in Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, you can learn and kind of almost breathe in the experience of being in Rav Kook's world by going to his house. So you see on the top left, there's a picture. Now the neighborhood doesn't look exactly like this because this picture was taken several years ago, and now there are giant high-rises all around the building. But on Rehov HaRav Kook, if you go down a tiny alleyway, you make a right turn, you go up the stairs, you enter into Rav Kook's world. We had this schus, the amazing schus, not too long ago to visit our son who's learning in yeshiva in Israel. So Shabbos morning, he and I, we went to daven in Rav Kook's Beis Medrash. They open on Shabbos, they open Rav Kook's private room, and you see the Gemara that he learned sitting there. In the glass case are his glasses, his personal stamp. It's like mind-blowing. Rav Kook came from Lithuania. He lived at a very tumultuous revolutionary time in world history, and of course also in Jewish history. And he had insights that others never saw. He had a perspective on life that people had never seen, never considered. He wrote on every conceivable Jewish topic. He wrote tshuvas, Jewish law issues. He wrote poetry. He wrote machshava. He gave shiurim. He was the chief rabbi. He was the Rosh Hashiva. Everything. Minakotz alakotz. He's from the Gaoni Hador. I came across, I'm so excited about this recently. I have to tell you this anecdote. I'm sorry. There was a great commentary on the Chumash called Klei Chemda. It was written by a Polish Gaon. His name was Rav Meir Don Plotsky. So Rav Meir Don writes this amazing commentary on Chumash. It's incredibly complex. It's based on a lot of Talmudic back and forth. And I happen to find in Rav Kook's letters, in his tshuvas, a letter to Rav Meir Don Plotsky in Poland from Israel. What is the letter? The letter is, thank you so much for sending me your set of Chumashim. I really like them. Here are my thoughts. And he writes down a few ha'aras. Because if you are a Gadol Hador living in Poland, Rav Meir Don Plotsky, who are you going to send your Chumash to? Of course you're going to pack it up, take it to the post office, and send it to Rav Kook for a haskama, like so many great Gadolim did. So Rav Kook was internationally recognized as one of the Gaone Olam. He wrote this volume, Ein Ayah, which is a commentary on the Agadic sections of the Shas. He only got through, it ran over the course of several years, actually several decades. It follows the explaining and expounding on sections of the homily pieces of the Talmud. So much of the Gemara is halachic. So the Mishnah will teach you a rule, and the Gemara will explain that rule. What's the source of that rule? What's the scope of it? What's the application? What are the parameters? And then there are other statements in the Gemara. Some of them are magnificent and beautiful and self-understood on their face, and others are very difficult to parse. So for example, when the Gemara says, you shouldn't put too much mustard on your sandwich, like, why does the Gemara tell you that? So it might be because it's a good idea to know how much mustard to put on a sandwich. But it might be to tell you something and teach you something much, much deeper. Rav Kook, in that context, says, Musar is something sharp, it's something bitter, it's like mustard. It's good to be self-critical, but not too much. If you go through life with too much mustard on your hot dog, you can't really eat it. If you go through life constantly beating yourself up with so much sharpness, you can't live like that. So as I've been learning this Ein Ayah, one page after the next is mind-blowing. So Rav Kook deals with the idea of technology in multiple places. And the point of departure for this discussion, turn to page 7, is a section in Ein Ayah . It's at the beginning of the 8th page. Yes. Source 7. Just clarification. Source 7. We lost everyone. It's the first piece in the 8th perek. It's the first piece in the 8th perek. For those who don't have it, we're making more copies right now. We know that on Motzoi Shabbos, last night, you recited a bracha, or you heard a bracha, or you answered to a bracha, Borei Maorei Ha'ish. So there's actually a machlokas in the Gemara, in the 8th parak of brachos, whether the bracha is supposed to be Bara Shebora Meor Ha'ish, which is Beis Shammai's opinion, that is not the accepted opinion, or is it Beis Hillel says, Borei Meorei Ha'ish, which is what we paskin. Good. But Rav Kook wants to know, why are we reciting a bracha on the creation of fire? That's what he wants to know. Now, how many of us ever thought about that? I don't know. But what Rav Kook says, it's life-changing. It's unbelievable. And we're going to go through it one line at a time, and I have it marked so that you can follow in the piece. Lahoros. Let's start with right at the top. Shabar Beishamai says, Shabara Ma'or Ha'esh. Beisil says, Borei Ma'ori Ha'esh. We're going to learn this together one step at a time. Yesod Birchas Ma'ori Ha'esh. The principle of the bracha of Ma'ori Ha'esh, we say this every Saturday night. Hu Lahoros, it is to indicate. Shalo Levad Habriya Ha'organis. Not only is it that the organic, natural world, Habriya Ha'organis, not only is the natural organic world, V'chol Yitzurei Bereishis Hativiim, and all of the natural world, Ma'aseh Yedei Hashem Hema, they are the actions, the handiwork of God. Meaning, not only did the Ribbono Shel Olam create snails and the octopus and the grass, V'heim Mamalim Es Tafkidim, and they fill their goal, they fill their mission. Kemosha Gazra Chachmaso Hanala, like Hashem commanded. Ki'im Gam Kol Hadvarim Hamalachutiyim. All of the artificial, technological inventions, the Ribbono Shel Olam created technology. He didn't just invent the natural world, he gave us the Dvarim Hamalachutiyim. And Rav Kook explains, Sheheim Mimase Enosh, that they are the handiwork of a person. Every person makes these up, invents them. I'm on line number 7. V'tachbulosov, and their calculations. Shekol dor v'dor mechadesh, that every generation invents. Besisrei hateva, in the secrets of nature, loholi dvarim chadashim, to invent new things. You know, on the news recently, they're splitting atoms, they're inventing new ways to generate energy. They're inventing artificial intelligence with computers and machine learning. All these, says Rav Kook, are created by the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'toldos chadashim. Kulam, line number 9, Maaseh Hashem Hema. They are the works of Hashem. Sheyotzar es hateva, that God created nature. Ba'ofen haro'oi, in a fitting way, lehischaber im seichel ha'adam, that a person's cognizance, that our intuition and intelligence should relate to the natural development of the world. Shegam hu hinu chelek echad mechelkei hametzius, that the knowledge of physics and chemistry and all of the different disciplines that are out there that people are mining in a new way every day, that's also part of the Ribbono Shel Olam's creation. Shebekocho, line number 11, lahashlim, to complete this, ulahotzi el hapoal es hashlamas hametzius hativis, kol davar bizmano haroi. In every term, in every time, new things are being brought in to complete the creation. Hashem built into the original creation, initially, imagine a well full of technological information. All of these ideas, all of this potential to understand things. And he left it there. And he waits that every generation, somebody digs a little deeper and comes up with something. So somebody invents the cotton gin. And somebody invents the automobile. And somebody invents anesthesia. In every generation, those innovations, they're actually drawn from the well that the Ribbono Shel Olam created. Al Kain, says Rav Kook, this is the pshat in the bracha. Line 13. Anu mevarchim al hadavar harishon. We are making a bracha on the first thing, Shehotzi ha'adam b'chachmaso, that man invented Zigazet. Fire was the first invention. Why? Because Chazal tell us that on Motzoi Shabbos, of the first Motzoi Shabbos, the light started to ebb. Adam Rishon was created on Erev Shabbos on Friday, and he had this special Or HaGanos, 36 hours of light, of this supernal spiritual light. And then on Motzei Shabbos, because of what he and Chava had done on Erev Shabbos, that light went away after Shabbos. So Adam, the Medrash says, Adam was shaking. He was panicked. He had never seen darkness before. What happens in darkness? The Rebbe Shalom told him, don't worry, here's an Eitzah. Find two stones, two flints, two re'afim, and smash them together, and what's going to emerge from that? A spark. You can create fire. So that, according to Chazal, is the reason why we say Bori Bori Ho'esh on Saturday night, because Saturday night is the anniversary of the creation of fire. So says Rav Kook, what are we really making a bracha on? We're making a bracha on the first technological invention in mankind, in history. That Rebbe Shalom gave Adam the koach, the knowledge to say, oh, I'm going to make a fire. I'm going to make an internet. I'm going to make social media. I'm going to make an x-ray, a microwave, toaster oven. It's all signified, says Rav Kook, in the bracha of Borei Ma'orei Ha'esh. Vehu, line 14, Av Godol L'chol Ha'ischadshus. That is the Av, the Father, the paradigm that is inclusive of all innovation. Shalkol hadvarim hamalachutiyim, line 15, of all artificial intelligence, all innovations, all technological advances. Shehaadam motzi b'chachmaso, that we're going to figure out over time. Hu yitziras ha'orva ish. And that's exactly what he quotes now in this story. Now go to line 20, skip ahead. Va'onu modim, and we thank. Umakirim, and we recognize Shehi Maisa Hashem Sheyotzar Seichel HaAdam Al Zos HaTchuna, that God created us with the ability to figure these things out, to come up with Zoom and FaceTime and video chat. That all that capacity, insight, wisdom, that comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'chol habrad dvarim hapratim, and he gives it to you exactly. Line 22, all the specific details. Shebechol dor v'dor, in every generation, heim yotzim el hapoal, they're just being manifest what already existed in capacity. Anu tzrichim lahakirim l'maisa Hashem, we need to recognize them, line 23, as the handiwork of God. Just like kitzimche hasodeh, just like the beautiful flowers that grow in the botanic gardens, and you see them, you say, wow, Ribbono Shel Olam, you made such beautiful flowers. Hayotzim kol echad bezmano, that come out, Mirtz Hashem, we should merit to see the springtime. Kein tzamach haseichel ha'enoshi hamalachuti. So too did people, humankind, develop intellectually. We went from being primitive nomads to people who invented Krispy Kreme donuts. I mean, this is amazing. Did you ever see that? How it flips over. No one has to. It just does it. You know what I'm talking about? Do you see this? We live in amazing, miraculous times. It just flips the donuts by itself. It's amazing. Sorry. Yesh lo zmano hakavua. Each one has its own time. Ubamlos yamav. And when that time comes, that it's appropriate, shekvar ru'uya hi hametzios lios mishlalemish al yodo bichlola, when this is the right time for this thing to become manifest in the world, all of a sudden, mizdamnos, line 26, hasibos, the circumstances present themselves. Is that an accident? It's not an accident. Rav Kook says the Ribbono Shel Olam orchestrates it, that at this time and this place, this development is going to be introduced into the world. Sheyisorer ha'adam b'sichlo, that a person, some guy, I don't know, maybe his name is Salk or Einstein or whoever, that you should be yisora besichlo uberitzono lahotzi kol davar beito, to invent that thing in that time. Technology, says Rav Kook, it's an expression of the Ribbono Shlom's ratzon right now. And he expands on it. This, turn the page to source number 8. This is a piece of a letter that Rav Kook wrote. This is the first of 3 volumes of Igros, of letters. Rav Kook wrote to different people. This is in a very lengthy letter that was written, Tuf Reish Samachay, when he was first living in Yafo, to a man by the name of Mar Moshe Zeidel. There's 3 letters to this Rav Moshe Zeidel, talking about very interesting topics. Rav Kook addresses here fascinating moral, ethical questions of the day, like slavery, evolution, all kinds of educational issues. So Bain LeBain, Rav Kook is talking about these technological developments. And he takes this idea and he gives it more color. And he says, why is it, therefore, that in every generation something specific emerges from technology? He says, because, take a look, it only makes sense because people can only grasp it in that time. Tochen HaDavar, line number 1 in source 8. This is in the 91st Igro, in the Igros, in the first letters. Tochen HaDavar sheyesh mishkal miyuchad l'chol rayon. There is weight and value of every thought, umachshava, an idea, l'zman le'dasa upu'laso, in its time. Be'in shum mikra, it's not accident. Fehizdamnos bulti mituchnenes michuvenes klal. It didn't just happen in that generation, line number 2. L'mashal. And now he's going to give you an example to explain why it is that we become aware of these technological ideas, these discoveries at a specific time. He says, l'mashal, I'll give you a mashal. Imhaya no da davar tenuas ha'aretz, line number 3. If in antiquity, lefnei kama alfei shana, if people in antiquity knew about the rotational movement of the earth. Now, I don't really understand much about science, kayadua, but I do know that we used to go as kids to the science center, and they used to show us a thing that was moving around, and they told us that that's what we're doing right now. That's what they told us. And, you know, not everything in science is true, but on this one, I'll trust them. So Rav Kook says, why is it that it only dawned on people, I don't know, when Copernicus or some of the, whoever that chever was, 500 or 700 years ago, figured out that the world is moving around. Why is it they didn't figure it out 3,000 years ago? Why did they figure it out in the time of the Beis HaMikdash? Or in the times of the Mishnayos? Why did they know that? So Rav Kook says, I'll tell you why. He thinks it's obvious. Because if they thought that the world was moving, Hayahamino enoshi misyore laman al raglov, primitive people would have been afraid to stand up. If they thought that the earth was round, they would have been afraid to travel by sea, because they would have been worried that maybe they're going to, turn sideways. So they figured the earth is flat, and as long as you could see the end, you're pretty good. So Rav Kook says, it's actually correlating the scientific knowledge to what people can grasp, and that there's a development of humankind intellectually, cognitively, over generations. So now we can understand, with our much, much greater expansion of knowledge, we can understand that the world is round and that it's rotating, and no one's freaking out. No one's worried. Doesn't move. So Rav Kook says that the technological advances correlate to the cognitive development of humankind. Yes, there was a question. Yeah.
So that's the Haskalah movement.
Oh, very good question. So the question is, so why was the Haskalah, this movement of enlightenment, so frowned upon? So now we go back to our age-old tool model. Rav Kook will tell us, perhaps, and he's not here, so we can't ask him. But Rav Kook would say, wait a second, this is now a very important thing to be aware of. That in every generation, these new advances are what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to bring into the world. So he's illuminating the world with this enlightenment. So now we have bechira, we have choice. So the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a couple of French guys who sat around philosophizing about enlightenment. They probably had too much time on their hands. I don't know what they had going on over there, but they figured out there's such a thing. We should come up, turn the switch, enlightenment. Everybody should be enlightened. We should emancipate people. People should think for themselves. So Rav Kook would say that was a Ribbono Shel Olam aha moment. So now you have to figure out what happens next. And there was a lot of danger with that light that was introduced into the world. And unfortunately, many people, they took that light, and instead of illuminating the Ribbono Shel Olam's world with it, they actually darkened the world, instead of by looking inward, but by measuring it out. And there's a lot more to say about this issue. But this is going to be true, perhaps, for Rav Kook in so many different areas. Look at every movement, especially on a grand scale. If we take this away, and kind of you're alluding to this, take it away from like limited technologies of the Game Boy. Remember those days? Like that was a big technological advancement for car trips when we had the Game Boy. Before that, it was coloring books. Now it was like, boom, change of the world. We have Game Boys or the Nintendo, whatever. Remember the things that kept us busy in the car? That's on a limited scale. If we take this idea back, you're pointing out that really this idea from Rav Kook could be understood in a much bigger context. That the movements in general, and I think Rav Kook, you know, I'm not an expert in Rav Kook or anything, but I think Rav Kook is kind of alluding to this here and other places, that the broader ideas, let's say the idea of, I don't know, take nationalism in the 19th century, the Ribbono Shel Olam brought nationalism into the world in the 19th century, maybe because, I don't know, you have to ask him, I'm not God's accountant, but he wanted humanity to start thinking nationally. Well, maybe it's not an accident that the birth of Talmidei Chachamim starting to really talk about going back to Eretz Yisrael and building the Beis HaMikdash and offering karbonos. After they start talking about that, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, Rav Moliver, some guys who were caught up in the Enlightenment, you know, they might have had good beards, but they were definitely highly secular. So they came up with this idea of Zionism. Well, every nation needs a land. But that came in the backdrop of nationalism as a whole. Bismarck and all kinds of other guys, people. So according to Rav Kook, this is not really the focus now, but if you zoom out, it's like also a big mind-blowing idea. Every time there's a movement afoot, we have to figure out what that movement says for us from the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam want us to experience and understand about life? So Rav Kook has an entire essay called Ma'amar Hador, where he talks about this transformational period, the revolutionary period at the beginning of the 20th century. So what is emerging? What are people so tzehitzed about, you would say in Yiddish? What are they getting going about? Yes?
Take the woman movement, for example.
Yes!
And with Betty Friedan, you know, all those Jews.
So you're going to have to look, yes.
We wouldn't be here today, maybe.
Oh!
Because we also didn't want women to learn on a higher level because we were copying the Goyim who said that women should...
Well, that's... I don't know if I would agree with that exact way that Jews looked at women's learning, because we've always been... we have a long-standing tradition of women being highly educated in lots of different ways. And I would say we should acknowledge the sophistication and the nuance of that issue. But there is no question that in this perspective of looking at life, communism, feminism, socialism, every movement, you got to figure out, what is the Ribbono Shel Olam doing by introducing this now? You know, the whole notion of feminism may have something to do with Kabbalah and the Chiddush HaLevana. There's a lot that's potentially going on. Now, each of these movements has been, no question, it's facts on the ground, it's Dabar Yadua, every single movement that we are alluding to here can be and has been abused. Communism comes from a Nekuda Tova, you could argue. Maybe it's, or Omom Rav Kook discussed this in a different context. I don't want to get so carried away about the bigger picture. But communism, there are certain Yesodas about communism that are helpful, that in theory are valuable, but the way that it's expressed is such a horrible, ugly, destructive force that it's almost unrecognizable as a good light in the world. You know, how many people died of starvation or in gulag camps because of Stalin? Like, it's unimaginable. So getting back here, Rav Kook is now telling us so far 2 points, and we're going to end with a third. The first is that in every generation, the technological revelations are bore maore hoesh. These are technologies that were built in to the Bria, and we're just bringing them to light according to the Hashgacha. So when we ask, social media, divine intervention, the answer is yes. Yes. And number two, said Rav Kook, it is appropriate to the development of humanity at that particular time. But now Rav Kook takes it one step further, and this is obviously the big meaning for us. Rav Kook had a diary, a collection of notebook, paperlach, that he kept. They were printed in two volumes. They're called Shmona Kvatzim, eight notebooks. So in Rav Kook's Shmona Kvatzim, he has tiny little entries. Rav Kook was a ridiculously prolific author, an amazing writer. You know, he wrote a ton. He also wrote his own diary. Recently, this edition was published. It's a little bit controversial because this is the unedited edition of Rav Kook's personal writings, some of which, you know, you wonder, like some of them are very, very personal. And he writes about the Rebbe Shalom and the world and life and every imaginable conceivable topic in just a few lines. So here you have a journal entry in Chelek Aleph in Simen, if you want to use it. I have this here, thank you. In Simen, tough iron test. Look what he writes about the same thing. Well, I stole your source sheet, so at least I should give you the book. This one has the numbers, so I can follow. Hamusar ha'enoshi. Says Rav Kook, human development from a moral standpoint. Holechu v'tov b'pnimiyuso. It's actually, as difficult as it is to believe, he believed that it's actually increasing in its goodness inherently. It is internally, our moral compass is becoming straighter. We have greater sensitivity now. Ha-hitpaschus ha-madois, the development of science, is l'umaso ho-lechas hi-hispachtus ha-madois. Says Rav Kook, technological and scientific discoveries are correlated to moral development. Amazing idea. It's not just that it's hashkacha. It's not just that it relates to the way that we can grasp the world. It's that the technologies of the day relate to our moral development. So for example, here's a practical example that we can draw on from the letter that we mentioned a minute ago. We have a sensitivity today that they didn't have 2,000 years ago. And that is that it is unethical to own slaves. Now, 500 years ago, no one thought there was any ethical or moral qualm about owning slaves. But in the last couple of hundred years, and we live in the land of Lincoln, so we're mahader in this inyan, we know that it is absolutely morally repugnant to own slaves. So Rav Kook has an amazing idea. He says, what would have happened if, I don't know, 1,000 years ago, people would have woken up one day and said, you know, Taka, slavery is horrible. We should ban slavery. We would have had a big problem. We would have had no commodities. We would have had no goods. We relied on slavery to get stuff done. So Goldschum says, I'm going to do a toivah. I'm going to have Eli Whitney invent the cotton gin. I'm going to have the industrial revolution become a revelation in the world. I'm going to enable you to use machine labor so that when you have this aha moral development that says slavery is wrong, you won't be stuck because now you can just use machines to deal with the cotton instead of lo aleinu having to take human beings and make them pick cotton. What an einfall. Every technological revelation is correlated with moral development. So if Cook then has the question, yes, guns? We have to think about that. Every technology you have to figure out. Good, good. So Rav Kook will ask you, we'll say, well, wait a second. So how could the Torah have sanctioned slavery if the Torah is Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi? The Torah is the Ratzon HaElokim, which is Me'al Me'ever. So Rav Kook says, I'll tell you very simply, and it's a long essay, but this is, it's a goinistic of art. There are many different approaches to how to understand slavery in the Torah. Rav Kook has an amazing approach, this part of this long letter. I'll just briefly note, Rav Kook says that essentially the institution of slavery is the first formal code of workers' rights.
What?
Of labor protections. Because there will always be Efes Kilo Yebach Evyon Nebuch. There will always be, and Rav Kook talks about it in different ways, there will always be that poor person at the low end of the socioeconomic strata who's walking around looking to shovel somebody's snow. And we're always looking for a bargain. So we're always going to pay the lowest amount possible. So there are going to be people, Nebuch, living Epis in West Virginia, in some mountain, and someone's going to discover coal. So they're going to say, okay, Hever, you're all very poor. So what we'll do is we'll give you 10 cents. Go dig into that mountain and bring out the coal. And if you die in there or you lose an arm or a leg, Nebuch, there's going to be some other poor guy who's going to take your place. But if you believe in Avdus, in the context of Avdus, that person became your property. So you'd say, wow, that's a horrible thing. But the Torah has rules. A, because that person is your property, you have already a self-incentive to treat that person properly so that they'll do good work. But not only that, the Torah has rules about how you feed them and how you take care of them and how you clothe them. They're not just dispensable chattel. So that's parenthetical. But the point Rav Kook is saying for us is that every technological invention is correlated with moral development. Okay, so that's it. It's true, technology is a danger. And it's true, technology is a tool. But Rav Kook is opening our minds to think differently about the world. What? He's asking us to think. What is the Ribbono Shel Olam telling us now? And so let's talk l'maisa very briefly about two different ways of thinking about technology and social media and all of these things today. The first is, of course, the tool side of it. That these tools enable people to connect who would, maybe they would never see each other, right? 50 years ago, when you lost touch with that friend, you literally never saw them or heard from them, and you never benefited from that friendship. You never maintained any connection, but now you could do that. It's a tool. Of course, there are dangers, but there is the tool of how do we use that? The idea of staying in touch, the idea of crowdfunding. We talked about it earlier. You raise an amazing amount of tzedakah with crowdfunding. Rabbi Sachs, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, he had two awesome ha'aras about technology. He once said, I heard him once say, that he thinks that the purpose of the innovation of the internet was for the proliferation of Torah. You know how many shiurim are on YU Torah now? Upward of 300,000 shiurim. I mean, how many lifetimes would it take to listen to all those shiurim? It's unbelievable. You could be connected to shiurim all the time. But now we can understand how this tool is also connected to moral development, which is maybe now we have greater sensitivity to people who live in other places in the world. Maybe it used to be that you never, could you ever imagine the life of someone living in Kenya or Somalia or Ukraine? There was no kesha, there was no connection, it wasn't shaykh. Did you care or did you even know that Afghan women didn't have access to learning? It wasn't really shaykh to a person in a world away. But now, the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us, perhaps, a new moral sensitivity to people all around the world. And you know what he did? He gave us the ability to bring people cheap education. Because if you can get some village in Afghanistan, you can get them some technology, you can get them education. But maybe we wouldn't have cared about that 100 years ago, but now we care, and now we have something we could do about it. Maybe. Maybe it has to do with the ability to give people health care that we're sensitive in a different way. The point is that Rav Kook is begging us. He's illuminating our eyes. He's opening our eyes to ask the question, what does the Ribbono Shel Olam want of us in this door? You know, people saying, it's true, niskatnu hadoros, the doros have became lower. You know, we're not as great as the previous generation and the Friedrich generation, and that's true. But there's an opposite perspective. Rav Kook is saying that our moral development is growing. There was another great Kohen, the Kohen Tzedek of Lublin, Rav Tzedek HaKohen of Lublin. See, right in Tzikar HaTzadik, something mind-blowing in Nun Beis. He says, you know, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that the door of Mashiach, the last generation, that door, it might be kulo chayav. Totally morally bankrupt, decrepit. And that's going to be the door that the Mashiach will arrive. Which he quotes the Gemara Moed Katan, that the door that the Beis HaMikdash is born in, is built in, is a remarkable generation. It means that if the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving us this wild development of technology in such unprecedented speed, it must be that we have big time neshamas. There's a major ore. We have tremendous, tremendous koach. So when we see these technological innovations, Rav Kook says, wow, think about this. What is the light that's going on behind the darkness, beneath the darkness? Yes, there's so much darkness, so much brokenness, and so much shallowness. But what's the light on the inside? It must be we have so much capacity for connection. You know, so much of social media is about comparing, and it's about the outside, and it's about what the other person looks like. But maybe that's a distraction. That's the Maisa Sutton. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam introducing that in the world, so that we should be distracted from the fact that we have so much internally. We've developed so much. We have so much ethical, moral sensitivity. We have so much to accomplish, to appreciate. I'll close with one ha'ara. And maybe this is a practical element of this. In addition to the dangers and the fact that technology and advancement is a tool, and that the Ribbono Shel Olam is inviting us, says Rav Kook, to think about what this generation and the advantage of technology, what does it mean? And I don't have the answer. I think we should all really think about this. Is that I think there's also a lemaisa that we create for ourselves. There's a man, his name is Franco Pepe. Franco Pepe is an Italian pizza maker. According to some food ga'onim, he is the greatest pizza maker in the world. He lives near Naples, Italy. And he had a ha'ara. This is the translation from the original Italian. If we only relied on technology, we would all have the same pizza. If we all relied on technology, we'd all have the same pizza. The fact that we have technology now, what it does is it gives us the opportunity to choose to personalize. In antiquity, every pizza was different because everyone made the dough differently. Now that there is technology, you can buy pre-made dough. I'm not saying we ever do this, but let's just say in our house, there's not a lot of pizza dough from scratch making with fresh yeast. You know what I'm saying? It's not a priority. But for a pizza maker, right, you can choose to just buy the generic dough, or you can watch this guy. Okay, maybe this is wasting time and technology, but it's beautiful. You watch this guy sit over a wood, like a wood barrel, and he puts in, you watch him, he has specific kind of flour, and he puts it in, and he's megalgal the flour with the water, and he tastes it, and he lets it bubble, and you see the bubbles come up. And he says, that is what makes it personal. It's dafka with the foil of technology that you make it personal. So perhaps the opportunity of technology is actually to create interiority. It's to create those moments when I'm making a conscious decision to take my phone and put it away, not just on airplane mode, to leave it downstairs or to put it upstairs or in a closet. Because by doing that, you make your own pizza. You personalize your life. You tap into the koach, the ore that must be there, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving us for this door. It's the doro that's at the footsteps, as the Chafetz Chaim said, of Mashiach. With these amazing technological innovations, we take those innovations, we look at them, and we say, okay, so how do I lead my life now? What can I do in the world of social media to create my own interiority, my own presence, my own being at the moment? We can create it, we can choose it, and we can appreciate it in the light of Rav Kook's life. Halavai, we should be zocheh to struggle through this challenge that the Rav Kook gave us, but to realize through that struggle, which is what the Rav Kook is calling on us, that there is or within that. It's the Borei Ma'orei Ha'esh of our generation, and that we should all tap into that light. Thank you very much.